Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course I would. That's a particularly stupid question. If they are, show up. Of course I want to play at the weekend.
And you're very welcome to Golf Weekly. We're coming at you on a Monday. Such is our excitement to talk about the final major of the year, which takes place at Royal Birkdale this weekend. But before we get to predictions for Birkdale, we have a few things to sort out, not least the fact that the Legends Tour had their Irish event at Carton House over the weekend. I sauntered out on a gloriously warm Saturday afternoon, 24, 25 degrees, caught up with Gary Murphy on the 3rd, I think it was. I followed him for a bit. Happy to say Gary is with us, as is Dave McIntyre. Gary, you were going just fine when I followed you. Like, you were one under, and I said, he's got this in good hands. I think he looks nice. All his shots are lovely, particularly on the 4th. You hit driver 3-wood to 15 feet on the par 5. You left the putt a little short. It was online, but, you know, clearly didn't have your Wheaties, but still, I walked away going, you know what, Gary's going to put in a good number today, and you did.
A cricket number.
Yeah. What happened to you?
It was a tough week down the back of the field again, which is humbling, would be one word you could use. Very frustrating. I actually got a load of practice in at the start of the week, hitting off that lovely turf with brand new Pro Vs. So took a couple of days off work and put in a good bit of prep and felt pretty good. Actually hit the ball fantastically well on the range on Friday morning and went out. And I had no rhythm with my driver. I think I was trying to hit it too hard. And I've changed drivers recently and it's a bit lighter, and I've took me about 2.5 days to work out that you just swing it smooth and it kind of goes where you want it to go. So I hit 3 fairways the first day, which is most unlike me. And then you saw me on Saturday. I was 1 under through 9, played lovely. Should have been a couple better maybe. And then winged it right of Osama bin Laden on 10. Archaeologists will find it. And then did the old saver, hit it left with my second, couldn't find that either, and ended up taking a 9 on a par 4, which is kind of a par and a bogey, really.
Yeah.
And then it was just the muck after that. And then I played lovely yesterday, and I had 2 shocking holes. So I had a shank, I had a lost ball, I had a double bogey, and I had a treble bogey, and still managed to get it around 74. So there's
six
a lot of
birdies
good
yesterday, Gary,
and 6 birdies. Yeah, thankfully, yeah. Or it would have been another cricket score. But yeah, no, there's some good stuff there. Learned a lot actually. So if I can put the learnings into practice, the future is bright.
I thought, like, so just watching you play, and look, I anybody who's into golf, I can't recommend enough the opportunity to watch pros play And there's no, there's a handful of people following each game. It's you get up very, very close. Although, mind you, when I first came on, Van Phillips was putting and he asked me to stop.
Yeah, because that was a good start.
Huh?
That was a good start.
Yeah, it was. He was like, sorry, can you just hold it there for a second? I was like, oops, sorry. But like even on five, hit a lovely drive, you just right hand rough. But then I thought your approach was sensational. And I was just, what was it, 10 feet up beyond the flag. But like, I was watching your swing and I was going, Jesus, if everybody could just swing that easy. Like just yeah, gliding through. It was just lovely to watch. Mm. And I have to say, I looked at your score later on that day. And obviously I saw the nine. I was like, Jesus, something terrible must have happened for you. Like, and I'm assuming I thought two lost balls, surely, because it can't be anything else. Because the way you were playing, no way, you know.
Yeah. A couple of things. I think the crowds were really disappointing. I know it's the weekend and everyone loves to play the golf and all of that, but Johan Edford shot 17 under around De Monte for three rounds. And
a three-time DP World Tour winner, you know?
Yeah, like, and the Sunday, it was a tough day. It was at least a two-club wind. Like, I hit a wedge on the second. I hit it in one of Monte's bunkers off the tee and I had to just lay it out because it was unplayable. And I had a 115 flag and I was just trying to chip a wedge under the wind. And like, it only flew 100 yards. So it was, you know, it was a good, good, and I hit my wedge kind of 132. So it was a good draft the last day. So to shoot 6 under in the final group, because Rob Coles shot 65-65.
That's right.
First two rounds. So the standard's great. And it was just a pity that more people, you know, didn't get out to, I would say, appreciate it really. And it could have helped me find a few more golf balls as well.
I emphasize, like, it's such a brilliant opportunity to watch, like, you know, the best players. I mean, I know it's the Legends Tour, but you're watching players like play golf that 99.9% of us hackers can only dream about playing. And it really is. It's a privilege to watch great golfers go about business.
To be honest, it's a different game too. It's a bit different to looking at an Irish Open because, you know, realistically, you can never do what Rory does or hit it like that. But probably the same for the Women's Open. You know, I watched the end of the Evian and my gosh, the way some of those women swing the club, it's absolutely, and it was a dramatic ending, but there's more to be learned, I think, from maybe some of the older guys. And now, obviously, Edvers, he's just gone 50 and he's still in showroom condition. He looks like a bloody film star, but...
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
He does. Like, he's... I remember I was in a restaurant one night in Switzerland and this couple... Because he looks so like Roger Federer, it's unbelievable.
Mm.
This couple came over just losing their minds because they actually thought it was Roger Federer in the restaurant, but it was Johan. But, yeah.
Was that his wife or his girlfriend or partner or whatever on
his
the back?
His girlfriend, yeah. Take a lot of that to kill a few.
Of the 60 in the field at the weekend, 11 are Ryder Cup players.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
That's enough to get you going. And I wasn't there, obviously, but...
The weather was spectacular.
Gary, you're talking about the crowds. The weather was spectacular. I don't think it's promoted properly.
Possibly
like what
not.
I just said there, how many people who have any of the remotest, most casual interest in watching golf in this country would have been aware that 11 Ryder Cup players were teeing it off in Carlton House at the weekend?
That's a very good point.
I do think the doubleheader kind of affected, you know, little bit of the action. But it possibly is something they need to do better, because I think if you just went down for 3 days and follow the leaders, obviously there's Peter and myself out the back putting the flags out. But, you know, the standard of golf is fantastic.
So let me ask you. A delicate question, perhaps, but so you played with Van Phillips on Saturday, but you were also playing with Heidi Huell.
Yes.
Now, who is Heidi Huell when she's not at home?
I think Heidi Huell is, I think she's a retired German surgeon. I think she was, and she just loves the golf, and they have a Legends experience, and she plays about 6 events a year, and she just loves it. So, And she's a nice lady. Obviously, she's not the best golfer on the planet, but she paid her money and she's entitled to go out and enjoy herself.
So this is it. And I guess the delicate part of the question is that I mean, obviously yourself and Van are tested old pros. You know what you're doing. But like I watched Heidi, and she seemed like a perfectly pleasant individual. But, you know, to say she's hacking it around a little bit, like, does that put you out of rhythm, or does it? I mean, or does it even, is it even something you pay attention to?
I played in China last year, and we played in a four-ball. So we played with two amateurs, and they wanted to finish out on every hole. It was 46 degrees. It took us 6 hours and 6 minutes. That was challenging. And then on the second day, I lost my mind with one of the amateurs because he was putting out of the rough from behind the green from about 80 feet, and I hit it into about 2 feet. My ball was technically on his line, but when you're putting out of the rough from 70 feet down and across a hill, if you can hit that marker, you're probably not putting out of the rough. So, and he asked me to move my marker, and I had a bit of a moment, but no, it is what it is. It's an income stream for the tour to help the tour to survive. So, you know, we're playing on a great golf course in the sunshine for a decent pot. So you just get on with it. And
yeah,
the only thing was I played with Van and Simon Cowan the first day in a three ball, you know, and then you're kind of playing with an amateur the second day. It's a bit different, but there's no excuses on my part. I just didn't have my stuff.
Yeah, fair enough. Van seems like a tidy golfer as well.
Former Portuguese Open winner.
Yeah.
And he actually won his last tournament 2 years ago to keep his status, and he's now playing full time. He's been over doing qualifiers on Champions Tour and playing a few majors, so he's still pretty sharp.
Like, how I can't believe that it's to do with ability or lack of talent or anything like that. Like, to what extent, I mean, realistically, are you able to, if you're, how can I describe it? I mean, you've other obligations besides practicing golf. Like, you do lots of different things, but coming up against the likes of someone who's dedicated full time, or a Johan Edfors, who I realize that he's, you know, in, what do you call it, a showroom condition. Like, is that like does it make it just harder if you can't dedicate yourself fully to the thing?
Oh, there's no doubt. I think anything you do, but the difference is, you know, because when I'm playing well, physically striking the ball, and my short game has tightened up a lot since I've played a bit more, but it's just that mental sharpness. And then just, you know, the nuances of certain shots. Like, there was a couple of, obviously, you hit more bad shots too, but, you know, even just clubbing, controlling distance, like a simple, where was it on one hole in particular, I had like a 100-yard shot, and I was trying to pitch it just behind the flag. You couldn't go long. And I hit a really nice shot, but it's pitched 4 yards too far and brings the back of the green into play. Whereas if you're, you know, years ago, if you're playing full-time per se, you just wouldn't make that miss. And then you're just making stupid mistakes and probably lose a bit of patience that you wouldn't have lost previously. Mm-hmm. And all those, you know, the sum of those parts add up to two or three mistakes around. And then when you're playing against guys that are on top of their game, they're three or four shots better possibly on that given week. And that adds up to a substantial difference in where you finish. But I still love it. I really do. Like, I played,
that's good.
Jumped out of bed at 5:30 Sunday morning, you know, really excited for the opportunity to go play. And, you know, I'll keep plodding away until someone tells me to go home.
Absolutely. One player who is plodding away is Tom Kim, who held off Min Woo Lee to win the Scottish Open at the Renaissance Club. And feels, lads, I mean, I think this is his sixth or seventh win, but it feels like one of the more significant wins of his career. For a guy who's, what is he? He's not the longest off the tee, but he's good ball striker, other aspects of his game, clearly in great touch. But as I said, like, a significant win.
Yeah, it is. Look, it's been a bit of a drought for him, which is kind of an unusual thing to say for someone who's still so young. Like, he's only just turned 24, but he hadn't won since October 2023, so he's pushing on 3 years without a victory. His game kind of deserted him. Pretty much all parts of his game deserted him, because he had such a massive breakthrough when he won 4 years ago. Like, he was, what is he, just gone 20 years of age, and people loved the way he carried himself around the golf course. He was always had a smile on his face. He was full of energy and animation and almost electricity when he's playing, albeit he's still too slow a player for the vast majority of people's liking. But even his President's Cup appearance was like well worth watching, but he hasn't done anything of significance for quite some time, and this is an absolutely massive win for him. It's he played some brilliant golf over the weekend, and he has the sort of game that can really do well in those sorts of conditions, and maybe this week as well. So yeah, I think I welcomed it actually. He's a different type of a character. We need more of those, and he brings something a little bit different when you're watching him. I just wish he was put on the clock a bit more often, but and maybe that would just force him to speed up a little. But like, it's good to see someone of his personality getting back into the winner's circle.
Gary Scott, I was looking, so he's relatively short by elite standards. I mean, so I see his ball speed around 172, 173. So he's what, 10, 15 slower than the really, really top guys. But very, very straight from the tee. Very strong iron player. And look, the putter behaved this week. As Dave said, this is a guy who can put it around under those particular conditions on a golf course that doesn't, that is going to reward accuracy over necessarily length.
I think if we were all doing our homework properly, we probably would have been tipping him up, and not the guys we did tip up. His record around here is very good.
Never finished worse than 17th.
Yeah, in four starts. And yeah, I guess he's kind of a bit like Sergio when he first came out. You know, he's kind of precocious youngster and played with a smile on his face, and then a little bit of that innocence dissipated. And you know, as Dave's saying, rightly so, he's slowed down a lot. I think they need to crack down on that a lot more. Pace of play. I just noticed it a bit last week too. Like Van Phillips, who I played with, is dreadfully slow. He's he nearly smoke a cigar by the time he gets the club behind the ball to when he pulls it back. And it's frustrating watching it. It's hard for TV, it's a tougher sell, I think. There's no doubt people play better when they play faster. I'm not saying too quick, but yeah, he's an exciting talent, and it's almost a home win too. You know, Genesis is the title sponsor, a Korean company, and it's, you know, it justifies their thing. And it's a big event too. There was a big event feel about it. It was a ridiculously good field. Perfect prep for a lot of guys for this week, and exciting for Kim too. As you know, as Dave says, you need a little bit of those kind of characters out there, because they're few and far between nowadays. They're all programmed robots, but a lot of them. And it was a good one, good
He
week.
did it in style as well, didn't he? Like, he shot
Oh,
the
big time, yeah.
joint low round of the day and bogey free round of 64, three birdies in the front, three on the back, and winning by two for Min Woo Lee, who actually had a brilliant round again a week as well, with all four rounds in the 60s. And you would hope that he can kind of push on from this, but just the matter of the victory. And on the, I suppose, I know we're going to get into the Open Championship in a bit more detail now. It is our Open preview after all, but I really enjoyed the week. Once you get past the fact that it is the Scottish Open, it is in the home of golf, along with Ireland, it is the home of Lynx Golf, and some of the greatest golf courses in the world are within, you know, an hour or 2 hours drive of the Renaissance Club. Once you get over the fact, it just doesn't feel Lynx-y enough for my liking. Yes, it's by the sea. There's a couple of holes
Wow.
looks relatively Lynx-y, but it's not like Troon, you know? And I know it ticks so many of the boxes, the Renaissance Club, in terms of the footprint of the golf club, its ability to host a signature event, a joint PGA Tour and European Tour sanctioned event, all the people that go to it, the hospitality, the food, the trucks, the corporate, all of that stuff is vitally important. And there are reasons why so many golf courses can't host a big event. It's why it's a major deal for the Irish Open to go somewhere like Port Stewart, for example, because while it's a phenomenal golf course, can it host an event of that size? So once it kind of come to terms with that, make your peace with it on the Thursday, then it actually turned out to be a really good weekend. The course played fast, firm, brilliant field, as you say, Gary, and some big names on the leaderboard, Rory going well on the Sunday. I know it's going to be there for a while. They've signed a longish contract to host the Scottish Open. So it felt like a really nice event to watch, albeit you're always looking at it going, what if? What if it was somewhere else? What if it was on any number of amazing Scottish golf courses that are like a stone's throw away?
I think in that area, it's like, it's by far the worst golf course up there. They kind of got lucky. It played a little bit fast, and you're looking at the links on TV, and it does feel a bit different, but it's just the way the commerciality of the whole thing, they're willing to put in the money, and logistically there's plenty of room around the place, so you can give it that big feel, atmosphere. But I think we'll get the true sense of proper links test this week at Brookdale.
Absolutely. Rory was in contention despite the fact that by his standards on Saturday, the front nine was diabolical. Like he chunked what looked like a lob wedge maybe, or a gap wedge on the short par three, like an even he. And then was it then when he was caught on mic going, geez, what did he say? I can't play this game, or I'm so bad at golf. Yeah. I mean, as bad at golf as he is.
One of the few times on a golf course you're thinking, Rory McIlroy is really relatable.
Yeah. But
honestly,
what's interesting...
It's no different for any of them, sir.
No, absolutely not. But what's interesting, Gary, he identified like one specific swing issue. So he was saying when you've got a left to right wind, he's saying that he was aiming the club face too far left of his swing path.
And yeah, so his face is left to where he's swinging.
Which results in these pull shots.
Yeah, but see, it's like everything. This is the hardest thing to try do on a course and try fix on the course. That's just not in his instinct to hit that shot, and he can draw the ball with his eyes closed. So it's try hit a draw into that shot, or try, Jack Nicklaus famously rode the wind every single time. So I think if he looked more at shot selection rather than going down the rabbit hole of his swing, it might be a good band-aid in the near future. But if he's going to spend all week working on that shot on the range, maybe don't try hit that shot. You don't always have to hit that shot. Mm. My game has changed now, where I would have comfortably faded the ball easily. The ball doesn't move that much anymore, so I don't really see that shot as much as I used to see it. And I don't know if I wouldn't spend Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday trying to figure that out. Really, if there's a couple of flags you can't get at, don't go at them and move on. But he does seem to over, if you think about it, right, when the ball is massively below your feet, you're more inclined to cut the ball or lose it right.
Yeah.
Now, most people overcorrect all the time and end up pulling it. That's kind of what he's doing. So it's a simple way of explaining that.
But it's not a big deal, is it?
It's no big deal at all.
Not
at
for
all.
Him, anyway.
Like, the weather's going to be so benign this week anyway.
Yeah.
It's not going to be... Like, the forecast is absolutely perfect in Birkdale. It's 22 degrees in the afternoon. There's very little wind, relatively speaking. I know Lynx Air is heavier, but I just go warm up, get loads of rest, play his practice rounds. He did really well here in 2017, even though he was out of contention and Spieth and Kuchar were the guys. But he still finished, I think, tied fourth. So it's a bit undercooked. So he's only played five times since Augusta, and that's only his second top 10 since Augusta. So, but he's in a great position. He got the juices flowing on Sunday, and he finished top 10. So that's a really good week of prep.
Well, a huge significance of that is that he led the field in shots gained off the tee. I don't know if that's happened to him all season.
Great point, sir.
Really well. And yes, his approach play had him down at 54th or something. So that's why he didn't win the tournament. And he shot a 3 over par on Saturday and he ended up losing the tournament by 5. So obviously, ifs, buts, and maybes. But if he'd even just about come close to holding it together on Saturday, he would have been very much in contention on the Sunday. But it has been a huge concern from all season. He won at Augusta National in spite of his issues. Whereas if he can take that sort of driving game to Birkdale, he's going to give himself so many chances. Albeit, look, it's going to be firm and fast and the greens are going to harden up and the fairway is going to have less scope for slightly errant tee shots because it's going to have such a run on it. You are going to end up in some awkward spots even if you split the fairway. But he must feel an awful lot better about that heading to Birkdale.
And I think his putting is elite as well.
Yeah.
You know, and the way, listen, like a bad round for Rory's 12 greens within reason. So the way he strikes the ball, if he can keep those driving stats this week, his putting, I can't see him being outside the mix at all unless something untoward happens. But and the other thing as well is Joe Soaps don't win around Birkdale. Like the role of honour here is crazy stuff. You know, Baker Finch is probably the only. He was a top player in his day and won the championship like a top player would do. So who's who?
He's like with Ian Baker Finch. It's a bit like Robert Johnson, who sold his soul to the devil so he could be the best blues guitarist in the world. It feels like Ian Baker Finch wins the Open and then all of a sudden forgot how to play golf.
Well, I can only thank Ian Baker Finch because I played the Open in Troon and shot a million the first day. And I'm like, oh, God, Gary, you're going to hold up this field. But he was in the middle of that slump. And thankfully, he shot two shots worse than I did. So, or maybe one shot, I'm not sure.
Oh, my God.
But it was a mad fall from grace, really. He got to
unbelievable. I remember it so clearly. I was just like, what?
He's not the first, Fiona, and he won't be the last.
No, for sure.
People dream of winning these things and they can be a burden as well.
Certainly from our perspective, the two names that were most notable for missing the cut were one Shane Lowry and one Scottie Scheffler. I'd be less concerned about Scottie Scheffler than I would be about Shane Lowry. It's just... Like with Scottie Scheffler, I mean, look, we'll talk about Scottie Scheffler in a second. I don't know that it's particularly, it's a little bit ominous that he just didn't have it to get to 2 under to make the cut. But for Shane, I just feel is that like, what's going on? Like, it just doesn't feel like it's there.
I think he's in a rut at the moment and he's just going to have to play his way out of it. We did see in 17, you know, a lot of low scoring at Birkdale, and the weather the way it is, it could be a low scoring week. So simply put, no different to Portrush. He opened up with 68 in Portrush. He needs a good first round.
Yeah,
he really does. There's a probably not from him or his team, but from the outside looking in, I would, you know, I think there's a big emphasis on him having a 4 or 5 under first round, just getting the mix. And
do you think?
Yeah.
Is that more of a, I want it to be true rather than I think it will be?
No, I think it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, what you've done before. There's no guarantees in golf. You have to go out there and do it and earn it. And sometimes when you're in it, because he is in a stinker form-wise, one thing can happen, you open up in a nice round and back it up with confidence on Friday, you know, rather than any trepidation. And you can have a big, strong week and all of a sudden you're off and running again. It can be as simple as that. Like, there's no denying he's doing all the things that he normally does and it's just not happening for him at the moment. And he's a little bit the other side of his luck and he's probably feeling sorry for himself, and as everyone is in that situation. And let's just hope he can get off to a good start. And because it's a cool buzz when Lowry, I know he won in Portrush, but even at other events, you know, when he was doing well in Troon and stuff, it's a cool buzz when he's doing well on an Open, because he's such artistry to his game and you just appreciate his nuances at an Open more so than somewhere in middle America, because we've all played lots and lots of links golf and you see those shots and they're hard to execute. When he does it with such grace. So hopefully he can just get off to a nice start on Thursday and everything is forgotten. I would say that's kind of where he is more in a season than anywhere else.
Yeah. Dave, Scheffler goes into this week as the favourite, although his really relatively poor performance at the Scottish Open suggests that this is going to be a much more open tournament than if Scotty was in like unbelievably good form.
Yeah, this could be as open build up as we can recall really in recent years. He's just not playing that well, and is the sample size is pretty large now, and obviously missing a cut has kind of just put the
his first cut in 72. Like I think was he to get 73 consecutive cuts made.
Just put a full stop under that, you know, kind of form where we kept trying to say over the last 8-10 weeks that the statistics belied his inability to get into the top three or to win, that he was still, you know, putting together statistically the sort of season that he produced last year. But that's not the case anymore. And the eye test is important here. He's not playing good golf by Scheffler standards, by the world number one standards. He is obviously the defending champion coming in this year, but he's definitely come back to the pack, which is great because... And given how Rory's unpredictability as well, they're the top two players in the world. They're the top two players in the betting, and they're the people that you would see most likely to be lifting the Claret Jug on Sunday night. But you could throw a blanket over 30 players coming to.
Yeah, well, let's try and do that. I mean, we mentioned Minwoo Lee, who played very very well at the Renaissance Club despite being beaten. This is a guy, Gary. I know you're a huge Minwoo fan. He has, like, I mean, I know he probably hasn't been in great touch over recent weeks, but at Birkdale, he can rip these low two irons. Like, he has serious length when he wants it, but, like, he can hit that control two iron to make it really work for him. He's a player that I think will certainly be in the conversation.
There's no doubt that he's, you know... I'd say of the first 10, he's heavily involved in the next 10. I think he's having a really good season. He had his first win on the PGA Tour last year at the Houston Open, and then he played absolute muck for the rest of the season. And he started the season very well. And, you know, big second place, lots of FedEx points and obviously lots of dollars. And he'll be thrilled going to Birkdale. And I think last week will... The only problem with the guys like him is how hard they're trying to win a major.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're going to get in their own way. It should be a natural enough step up for him to win a major because he's an elite player with an elite level short game, which you're going to need around links golf. And he has that, you know, that 280, two iron. You know, Harrington famously thinks you just have to hit a 280 around here. So... if that's the case, he doesn't even need a driver, and he's quite a good mid-iron player. I think there's, you know, there's 10 of those guys this week, really.
Yeah.
It's if they get in their own way winning their first major, that might be something, you know, no different to a Tommy Fleetwood or a Matt Fitzpatrick. There's always that little bit. If you look at the drama that McIlroy went through to win the Masters last year for a Grand Slam, a first major is a similar-ish thing for some of these guys. Obviously not quite as vast, but it is another step up the ladder. So he would be one of the guys. He's having a very good season. He's never going to be ultra consistent week in, week out. He's not that style of player, but his good is very, very good. And can he produce it to win the major championship? We will see.
I have a list of names here, Dave. Gary's mentioned a couple of them. So let's start with Matt Fitzpatrick, who just looks like he's just like purring away.
Yeah, and look, he wasn't helped by some of his playing partners at the weekend. He's one of the quickest players on tour, and Matt is... he struggles when the pace is slow, and it's maybe a part of his game that he maybe just need to focus on improving, because it affected him over the weekend in Scotland. He's playing brilliant golf. He's obviously won this year. He's a major champion. He's back home on English soil, and he's going to have an awful lot of the crowd with him when he rocks up on Thursday morning or afternoon, depending on what way the draw goes. And he's such an affable fella. I think he's become one of the more popular players on tour over the last 3 years. He's improved his Ryder Cup record.
Yeah.
He knows exactly how to handle sort of these really pressure situations. Some of his wins have been under intense pressure. And I'd say even this year with his brother was intense pressure for all sorts of different reasons when they won at the won in New Orleans. So he would be among my favorites of the week. Is he going to be able to keep it going for 4 days? The run of the green went against him in Scotland at the Genesis, and you could hear being picked up on one of the on-course mics saying, you know, we just haven't had a good bounce all day. And yes, you would imagine that these things sort of even themselves out, but that isn't always the case. So you have to be able to respond to that. And he's going to get some quirky old divil of bounces at around Birkdale at the weekend, ones that could cost him the tournament. So he has to be able to roll with those punches. But if you're talking about potential winners, he's right up there at the top of the list.
Another name that jumps out at me, Bob McIntyre, no surprises. Gary, what do you rate?
I like his chances a lot, actually. He's kind of one of the guys. He did really well at the US Open last year. I think he'd be able for it.
Yeah.
His putting under pressure is very good. He's a beautiful short game. Bit wayward from the tee. I don't think that will massively come into play this week. Because the conditions are dry, so I wouldn't say Tiger, you know, around Liverpool, you can get away with the 2 iron off the tee. He doesn't have that elite level power, but and that ability, you know, as Tiger did with long irons. But yeah, he's another one, you know, and he had a big week last week, which is a stressful week for him too, playing at home. No different to Shane or Rory playing in Ireland. It's just that extra dimension. So that would have been a good prep. I think him and, you know, kind of him, Fleetwood and Fitzpatrick and Hatton are the big kind of home hopes. There's a lot of heat on Fleetwood this week. Thought he did okay last week. Probably won't serve him too badly to have a kind of a warm-up rather than a heavy week in contention. So, but I do. There's just so many of them this week.
There is, isn't there?
Then you kind of look at the American angle. If it's going to be a little more benign than it has been in the past, Sam Burns is, you know, in really good form too. He puts very, very strongly. I just think the greens will be a lot different this week than last week. It's a slightly different kind of fescue, really. I think the Renaissance is a bit fescue is a little bit cruder. So I think, you know, if someone can have a special week on the greens this week, as always happens in links golf, you get in and you start holding them and you just think, my God, the hole is like a bucket. You know, they're easier greens to read within reason. So there's going to be a strong home charge, I think.
57 years since an English golfer last won the Open in England.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Not since Jacklin won.
It's a crazy start, really, considering.
That's insane.
And you think of some of the players that have won majors since, like obviously Jacklin himself and Nick Faldo never managed to do it.
Faldo won all his Opens in Scotland.
Won them all in Scotland. He won at St Andrews and he won a couple at Muirfield. Like, so that's really difficult for these guys to win on home soil. Justin Rose is one name we didn't mention there. Obviously, he's got a really good Open Championship record and a good major championship record.
Yeah.
But they do find it very difficult to really turn it on in front of the home crowd. It's going to be really hard for them this week as well. Like, the Americans tend to do really well around these sorts of places, and obviously Irishmen as well. But I'd be betting against there being an English winner this week, as much as I like Matt Fitzpatrick's chances. Historically, they find it very difficult to do.
Let's talk about some of the American names. So we talked about Scheffler. Look, what can you say? Like, he's the world number one. Look, if he shows up and turns it on, he's going to be hard to beat. But he hasn't really shown up and turned it on for quite a while. So as we say, it'll open up the field. So let me throw some names at you. Wyndham Clark, Cam Young, even Chris Gotterup, who is in obviously good nick at the moment. But like, let's talk about Wyndham Clark and Cam Young. Do either
I think
of you?
I think Cam Young is a bit out of. I think he's had his purple patch this season.
Right.
Maybe because there are like that's just the way the season goes. They, yeah. You know, Scheffler has been so insane in the last what 4 years. That's just. And we haven't seen that since Tiger in 2000. So that's not a normal level. He can win. He can win this week, Scheffler, with his B game. I don't think some of the others can do that. No. Goddard is interesting. I think he's a really good player. He's a powerful player. He had a very good defense of his title last week. He's straight over from the States. So I don't think he was ever going to win the tournament, just the way the maths works on these things. So he's a very strong chance this week. He's obviously very low on the betting too. I think him and Sam Burns would probably be the pick of the Americans. And then there's just so many. You know, Xander can turn up and do Xander
and
stuff.
He though,
so.
Jesus, I thought Xander was shocking. He was
brutal at the weekend. What, yeah. I don't, what happened to him? I thought he'd do a Rory on it this week. He'd, you know, have a good week. Maybe put two or three impressive rounds together. He was one under after the opening day, which wasn't the end of the world, but threw in a 74 on the Saturday, on the Friday, and missed the cut like by a distance.
Yeah.
And I had said on the podcast,
I think he's still injured, Dave. Like, it has to be something.
Well, if there was any sense of an injury fund, would he have been playing this week?
Maybe not.
He'd been playing last week, I mean, up in...
No chance, sir.
Yeah, at the Renaissance. Yeah. So you'd have to assume that whatever physical issues he's had in recent weeks have cleared up 100%. Otherwise, you just wouldn't risk it. So he would have been desperately hoping for 4 days around a somewhat linksy type of a golf course, and the wind was up on a couple of the days, and he's still very high up in the betting. Like, I think he's 7th or 8th. And I said on the podcast last week that he was going to be my pick for the week, but... Or did I pick him for last week's tournament?
I think you did, remember. Yeah.
Was it last week's tournament? Right. Well, that was obviously a dreadful pick. And I'm not going to make the mistake for this week, but he's probably going to go and win now. But he's certainly knocked my confidence in him. Better or not enough or not, he's knocked his own confidence in him. But yeah, Xander obviously going for a second Open Championship. He's out of 25-1 now, and I just he's slipped down the rankings in a lot of senses. Maybe there Colin Morikawa, is he? Obviously, another former Open winner and didn't play in Scotland as he tries to get over the injury that he's had. But another guy who knows how to play in the wind and holds those lovely, you know, soft fade irons into the greens. And if he brings his A game, he's going to be very hard to stop. But like we're just running through a leaderboard here of potential champions. And where would you stop? There's 30 names you could throw out there and make a cogent argument for them winning. And so what makes it so exciting? I hope it's as exciting when it actually happens. I hope the draw isn't a huge influence on the way the leaderboard looks going into Saturday and Sunday. I know that can bring its own level of excitement, but it can also knock out a whole host of potential winners because of pure, dumb, bad luck. There is a little bit of rain here and there, maybe in the forecast, but generally the conditions do look to be relatively benign by Open Championship standards, and for that reason you would hope that everybody who tees it up in the field is going to more or less get the same run of the green weather-wise, conditions-wise.
One guy, he's at 25, but you know what is he? 1, 2, 3. He's 5th in the betting odds is John Rahm. Certainly I've done this where week after week, I keep thinking John Rahm's going to show up. He's something to prove. He's obviously an elite golfer, one of the best, blah, 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 blah. And then just for whatever reason, either his flat stick just completely decides not to collaborate or some other aspect of his game goes south. But what are we thinking about John Rahm this week?
Well, I backed him to be first round leader last week.
Well, he
was 4 over par at the turn. For God's sake.
I
just thought he was going to come out with a point to prove. He was back playing a PGA Tour sanctioned event, and he obviously needs the Open to take one step further towards the Grand Slam, and that he was going to do something not special, but something eye-catching over the course of the 4 days. He was 5 over by the time he stood on the 12th tee. And then from then on, it got better. And he made a couple of birdies on the way in on the Friday, on the Thursday, and on the Saturday, on the Friday, again played the back nine and 4 under par. So there were green shoots for John Rahm, albeit finishing at 4 under par is not overly impressive. And like he was a full 13 shots behind the ultimate winner in Tom Kim, but I think he might have left the Renaissance Club with a quiet sense of confidence that, you know, I've got this return out of the way, and he has real pedigree, as we know from being avid Irish Open watchers down the years, when it comes to links golf. I wouldn't be writing him off as much as I'm willing to write off Xander Schauffele in the back of the last week. I wouldn't be doing that with John Rahm.
One player who I don't think will win, he's at 100-1, but he is the author of the most exciting bogey made in modern golfing history, and that was Jordan Spieth at the 13th at Birkdale. Can anyone really dispute that? Is that not the most exciting? I mean, I would argue that the run of holes is maybe the most exciting run I've ever seen. With I think the jewel of the Suns when Mickelson and Stenson went at it, I thought that was incredibly exciting. But I just, Spieth being kind of in the halfpenny place between the drive on 13th and then spending what seemed like 4.5 hours on deciding where to play the second from. But from that shot onwards, it was just like, you have got to be kidding me. That's, for me, the most exciting run of golf holes I've seen.
I was on course commentator for that. So I was there beside him when he was doing what he was doing. And it was just, his up and down for bogey on 13 was just astonishing.
It's honest to God, as I said, I think it's the best bogey I've ever seen.
That was such, like, he could have made, he could have made anything with the tee shot. And then to have the wherewithal to, because you don't want to go back and hit that same shot again. You just don't. So, and then to have the awareness, and you have to commend his caddy too, to calm him down and go, listen, where is the actual best place to drop this thing? But to go as far back as he did and hit that shot to get it up where he got it, and then to have the touch to get the thing up and, well, to pitch it, and then the courage to hold the putt, and then he gets up in 14 like nothing happened and nearly a hole in one.
Let me ask you a question. So if you were there, Gary, so were you like kind of right there watching the drop and the discussions around the drop?
Yeah, it was just a zoo.
Okay, but so here's my question to you. And Dave, I'll let you come in then in a second. It seemed to me that it was Spieth who dictated the terms. I'm not saying he did anything that was untoward or wrong, but he told the official where he was going to take the drop from, rather than saying to the official, come here, where can I go from? Like, what are my options here? It was like Spieth knew what he felt was the right option for him, and he was the one who went, no, this is where I'm going from. And so it took any doubt or any, it was almost as though he decided, I'm going to dictate the narrative of this.
I think if Harrington was in the same position, it would have been the very same outcome.
Yes, what I mean. It's like these strength of mind players who go, no, like, I'm not you're not telling me what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen.
It's like you're in company with impressive people, or you're at a meeting with the CEO or whatever, and you just know that's kind of who they are, why they are, where they are. And great champions have that in the sporting arena too. That, you know, strength of mind and fortitude to do what they have to do. But the way, it's like everything, you know, everyone gets some kind of a mini drama at some stage, and it's no different to Rory's 7-iron from the top of the hill on 15 in Augusta, just to have the ability to get back in and believe in what you're doing when stuff happens. And I think, that was, you know, because he was on the ropes all day that day.
He was. Oh, yeah.
Like, he lost a 3-shot lead immediately, and he just didn't have his best stuff by any stretch of the imagination. So for him to win in the manner that he did, it was, you know, it was a worthy champion. But it was so exciting too, because everything.
Go get that.
Yeah.
Play the last 5 holes of a major championship on a Sunday in 500 par.
Sorry, did he play the last 4 holes in 500 par?
Because he was 7 under. He was 7 under walking onto the 14th tee, and he finished on 12 under par.
Okay, so 5 under par.
Just incredible.
I don't think it's recency bias. I'm trying to think of whether Tiger in 2019 was. It was obviously very exciting, but it wasn't dramatic. I thought everyone going water on 12 was very dramatic, because it was almost as though they all went, here, Tiger, go win the tournament. But I just think that Spieth just changing the narrative completely, because Gary, as you said, like, he looked like he was in a leaky boat, you know. He was paddling this like leaky boat, and all of a sudden just decided, right, fuck this, no.
Yeah, but Kuchar missed that putt on 13. That was it was a bit like, you know, it was a bit like when Tommy was chasing down Shane in Portrush, you know, in that first green moment, and I think the third as well. Like, you just have to, you know, you have to bury those putts when you get a sniff like that. Doesn't matter if it's in a club match at Pierce Purcell level or whatever it is. When you, you know, if you're going to do it, you got to get those moments right. And Spieth did it, and that's why it was such a brilliant win. I think Thomas might. We were chatting about guys earlier. I think Thomas had a good week last week.
Yeah, he got his forearms in,
and he was there. I don't know if he had won his major at that stage. But he was there celebrating with Spieth, and I think Thomas might be another one of those outsiders.
Dave,
to get a bounce this week.
You're an encyclopedia of sporting moments. You have like easy access to like a whole range of them. Am I missing something if I say that that's the most exciting run of holes I remember in 40 years of watching golf?
Well, off the top of my head, like it's difficult to come up with something that is to better 5 under in 5 holes, like to win a major. You know, we've seen Ricky Fowler do it in the last 5 holes of the Players' Championship, which was just an astonishing run. But like in an actual major championship, I can't recall a player getting that hot at that point. I mean, people have gone around Augusta and birdied like 4 or 5 holes. Obviously, Jack's back nine in 1986 was astonishing. I mean, every putt he hit dropped, bar the one in 18. And so that, off the top of my head, that's one that I would kind of reach for. There was so much drama. And Spieth was a real favourite at the time, fans' favourite. Obviously, that took him to the three-quarter position when it comes to the Grand Slam. I don't think there were too many people shouting for Matt Kuchar around Birkdale that day.
And this is before Matt Kuchar decided to stiff the caddy in Mexico. So Matt hadn't really kind of become the golfer. He was still I think most people had a very neutral view of the Kuch.
Yeah,
I
can't think of something that's more spectacular than that.
Yeah.
You mentioned Mickelson versus Stenson, and
that was a more prolonged thing. I think Cam
Smith just
and
those 18 holes of like heavyweight. That was two heavyweights slugging it out for like full 15 rounds. That felt like
Yeah
I was trying to throw an honorable mention in for Justin Rose at last year's Masters, because like what he did in the back nine at Augusta was absolutely incredible. The difference being he didn't win.
I know he came up shy, but you're right. He added to that, and it put this enormous pressure on Rory. And there was this added drama about it all. I'm not suggesting for a second that there aren't, you know, that golf isn't littered with dramatic moments. I just think, just for sheer, I remember being on the edge of my seat for the entirety of that run in from 13 right through to the final putt on 18. And I was just like, just blown away by it. I just couldn't get over it. Anyway,
we're desperately hoping for something similar this brilliant Masters, obviously the way that Rory won it, but PGA Championship again. I don't know how often we've said this year, oh, with all due respect to Aaron Rye, it's just so unfair, but it didn't float my boat the way in which he went out and just dominated the field at Aronimink. So that's not going to last very long in the memory. And the US Open as well, Wyndham Clark and all. Are we going to really remember that either?
You know, no.
Kind of unbeatable on the day. So he had opened up such a big lead. And while he did his best to throw it away at times, and we're not going to go through all of that again. It saddens me to think that come Sunday night, we have to wait till April for the next major championship. And it's going to be mid-July. There's no Ryder Cup. All we have to look forward to between now and the end of the year is the Irish Open. And that's at a golf course. It's going to bring with it the whole new sense of controversy as well. We don't know what's going to come from that in the build-up and during the tournament. The golf calendar is broken. And I don't know how they're going to fix it or if there's any inclination or desire to fix it. But for us to be mid-July and have no major championship golf to look forward to till nearly at the midway point of next year is crazy.
I know, it's 9 months between major championships. I don't disagree.
Dave, you've forgotten the British Senior Open the week after. If I get through the qualifier and win, it'll be the greatest story ever told.
That will be the greatest. That's even better than the Bible.
Come on,
absolutely. Then don't forget the Walker Cup, which is in Lahinch in the second week of September. Is it the
First
no,
week.
first week. First
First
week.
weekend, yeah.
First weekend of September, you've got the Walker Cup. So the last time the Walker Cup was played in the Republic of Ireland was 1991, I think.
I caddied in it, Fionn.
What?
Yes. For
Wow.
Jay Siegel, one of the most decorated US amateurs of all time. Turned pro at 50 and won, I think he won two senior opens.
That's going to be a good week. Walker Cup and then the Irish Open the following week. There's the world, the golfing spotlight will be on our little island of ours for a week at
30,
least.
30 quid for a ticket for the weekend of the Walker Cup.
Yeah, it's, I mean, on a terrific golf course as well. But I
Incredible.
agree with you, Dave, in terms of, I mean, the Irish Open will have like all kinds of attention, maybe not all of it for good reasons, but, and also apparently, I mean, you never know, but like he did say that he might show up, you know?
Yeah, well, look, I hope he doesn't, but look, we'll focus on that. We'll call that
Well, at the time.
a kick down the
Okay, pick
road.
your
But look,
winners.
what I want is an epic finish on what has the potential to be the greatest single day in television sports watching history.
Oh,
That
yes, the World
we
Cup
go
final.
from World Cup final, All Ireland Senior Hurling final, final round of the Open Championship. Like, there's going to be an arse groove in our couches that is going to be beyond fixing by the time we get off that couch at maybe 10, 11 o'clock Sunday night.
Gary, what time? So we're obviously because it's the last major of the year, and we're going to have a major watch along. Gary, what's the latest time you can do before? Because you're heading over to Scotland.
I don't know. What's your ideal time? It's probably 12 o'clock, is it?
Well, I mean, no, because Shane is going to be on this side of the pond, so we'll hope to have him on, so we won't have a time difference issue. He's not, East Coast time.
Okay,
He'd
so you
be.
could do 2 o'clock type of thing or something
Well, we
like
could
that.
do 11 or 12 or yeah.
I might be able to do 12. We'll see.
Well, look, we'll announce during the week about details, specific details of the watch along. Dave, I'm assuming that you will be available
I
or.
will try and do whatever I possibly can to ensure my availability.
But it's precisely because you've got hurling final, you've got World Cup final, but that's not what till 8 o'clock. Oh Jesus!
Now, the Open Championship will still be going on at that
That's what I
point.
was going to say. Is like you'll get that overlap. Like
Yeah,
they were
I
playing till
think.
well after 10 o'clock on Saturday night at the Genesis.
And how are we going to watch France or Spain play Argentina?
Yeah.
We have to come up with three tips for next Sunday. So who wins the hurling, the
Well,
football, and
Limerick,
the
obviously,
golf,
Jesus Christ.
and do the quad with the Archbishop of Canterbury?
Limerick for the hurling, and I know nothing about hurling, but I can't. Do you see anyone beating Limerick, Dave?
I think Galway will rattle their cage, yes. I don't know if they'll beat them, but it's a Galway team that are really coming, and they've got a manager who knows what he's doing. So I expect it to be a more memorable All-Ireland than some people are predicting.
Okay. Ooh. I mean, a man who's much closer to the truth of these things than I am, so I'll go with your. For the golf, though, I'm going to throw it in. I'm actually going to go for McIlroy.
Yeah, I'd love McIlroy to win it. I mean, it's what, 12 years since his last open, his only open.
Too long, isn't it?
Yeah, look,
Yeah,
the way he drove the ball of the weekend gives me huge
yep.
encouragement. And I would love to see McIlroy win a clincher, like win a really gritty, the sort of open that it could have been when Cam Smith won at St Andrews, where like if McIlroy held one or two more putts, between the 10th and 15th holes, we would have had this dramatic finale. That's the sort of open I'm looking for. I don't want McIlroy to win one pulling up by 7 or 8 shots. I can't see that being the case, obviously, but because there's so many players who have real chances this weekend, I'd love to see McIlroy do it. I'd love to see Larry find a bit of form and kind of just get carried on by the crowds and the Open Championship feel because it's a tournament that he loves the most. But if I had to pick a winner, I actually don't know. That's the beauty of it. I don't know who's going to win this week,
But
and I
you got
don't
to
know who's
guess one.
going to win.
I mean, I don't know who's going to win it, but I'm going for McIlroy,
Well, I
so.
had to guess one, and I hope this is not the case. Colin Morikawa, I just have a feeling for him.
Okay. Gary?
I like the Rory factor. I think I could give you a case for about seven or eight really good cases. I think Rory is positioned nicely. I always Fancy Rory in majors, especially since last year. I think he's got good previous around here. JP famously said, "You're Rory F. McIlroy." So if he is that person this week, I think Rory will win. My Hail Mary for that Super Sunday is Siwoo Kim. I think he's very, very much under the radar.
Okay.
He's a big outsider. He's a big outsider. He's my Hail Mary. And my trifactor is Galway, Siwoo Kim, in England.
Jesus.
Wow. You think England have it?
And we'll all be on a hammock in Barbados if that comes off.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. I mean, look, obviously two big semi-finals to come this week. I think England have the beatings of Argentina, to be honest. I mean, Argentina needs some, like, you know, elder medicine. That's what they need. Although they're street fighters, you know what they're like? They strike me as a gang who happen to be very, very good at football, but also really good at... they're very, very good at football, but they're also really, really good with a stiletto blade. That's what Argentina strike me as being. Hard to see. I don't know. I think France, for me, they're the ones...
Yeah, they'd been a treble for me, but I like Siwoo Kim. He had a really good week, finished strongly after a fairly average opening round. He was shot three rounds in the 60s, that he can kind of quietly go about his business. He never brings too much of a crowd with him, and he could be beavering away in the background and then really come good going into Sunday. So it's a pretty good call from Gary.
There you go. Right, okay, well, stay tuned. We'll give you the details of the exact time of the watch-along, but it'll be sometime kind of late morning just to take account of movements of different people, etc., etc. Lads, as always, an absolute pleasure. Gary, it was a lot of fun watching you play. You're a beautiful, beautiful golfer, even if the results didn't quite reflect the elegance of your overall play. Thanks, Dave, as always. And sure, look it. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you on Sunday.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks, guys. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.
Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.